That's one problem that I struggle with. I want things to make sense. I want my pedal board to be slick and like all tight, you know, like these all black pedals or whatever. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of stuff that that kind of bothers me when I'm doing something, you know. So it has to be perfect for me, perfect conditions. I have to remove all the frictions to do something like that. And I always tell people to do that, you know, remove frictions. I have a tripod here. The light is here. There's another light in the back. When I need to record something, I just take my camera from there, put it there, turn myself to that side of the studio, and I hit record. And I got good at this. We could make a sketch right now, and it would take us like half an hour. It'd be ready to post online. Doing that, I don't get better at like technique or anything like that, right? But I get better at music, you know, at like making it.
Hello.
Oh, you're coming in nice and crystal clear. That's lovely.
Nice.
Sometimes, yeah, folks are just calling in from what looks like some old cell phone in like a basement somewhere. And I'm like, I can barely hear you. I can barely see you, but whatever. We'll make it work.
Calling from their BlackBerry.
Yeah, call
from that. Calling from a potato.
What is that going on in the back?
Yeah, it looks like Matrix and stuff.
Yeah,
it's actually like an IKEA thing that I bought. They did a collaboration with like these DJs, the Swedish Mafia, something like that. Hmm. And so they had a few pieces of like lighting and stuff. So I just bought it. That it's just they have like it has like some different patterns and stuff.
It's just a decorative yeah. thing. Ah, gotcha. I wasn't sure if it was like a MIDI thing or something like that. But I mean, I gotta say, you know, I've been so inspired by just your general aesthetic.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, I was like, man, he's got it down pat. His lights look great. His background looks great. He looks great.
Thanks, dude.
I think it's so important now to have that whole package. Like, I don't think any of us could really get by doing the music thing without, you know, kind of looking good in the process. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you think about that, but yeah. I find the more that I work on my visual stuff, the more that people gravitate to the stuff that I'm actually writing.
Yeah, that's true, man. Like I started like really taking seriously the Instagram stuff like maybe 6-7 years ago, and little by little, just keep improving, because if you do it enough, you start learning, okay, well, this doesn't work, or I need to change my light to this, from this place to this place, and then it looks better here, and then you have like lights bouncing back and stuff like that. You need to learn a lot more than just writing music and playing, you know. Nowadays you have to know how to film yourself, you have to know how to record yourself, and I'm lucky that I kind of caught the bug to do those things early on.
Yeah, I could see when it made the shift in your Instagram. Even like 3 years ago, if I really go down kind of far,
yeah,
the amount of improvement from like 3 years ago to 2 years ago, you really started to do the research to figure out how to make things look super good.
Thanks, man. It takes a while, you know. Like people always want to like skip the steps to get to where things are starting to look nice, and you have like some sort of like brand identity, you know, on what you do. You know, people recognize your video in the first like second because it looks kind of similar to the other ones. Even the guitar angle and stuff. I sometimes experiment with that too, but I found that like doing this is shooting from this side on to my right here. Mm-hmm. It's the one that works best for me. Yeah, that's the one that people seen the most. And also, like 3 years ago, we changed. We moved out to another place, and then I got like a proper basement, so I can do like my studio and stuff. So that's when things start to get better, because I had more space to do the lighting and all of that.
But you also do design as like your main gig.
Yeah. So I've been a digital designer for 15 years. That's the reason why I moved out of Brazil. I got a job in Europe first, and then after that, I got a job in Canada. So I've been here for like 9 years.
I was just going to say, you don't sound French.
No, I don't. Yeah. I'm Brazilian. Yeah. Yeah, but like, yeah, and my French sucks. So it's so funny that people always want to talk, speak French to me. And I'm like, I speak like a kid in French. So.
Oh, that's funny.
So yeah, design has been my main gig for a long time. But like, it's funny because only recently I started to kind of appreciate that I have that gig, you know, because I always wanted to be a musician, not a designer. You know, I always wanted to do music full time. I've been playing, you know, since I was very young, like 6 years old. I was doing piano classes and stuff like that. And I always wanted to perform, you know, like since I was a kid. And when I started like playing bands in my early teens, like let's say 2001, 2002, playing punk rock and stuff, like, first time I learned like 3 or 4 chords, I just wanted to write music right away, you know, and write stupid stuff. Like, I was listening to Blink-182 for sure. I wanted to write stupid shit. But yeah, I always wanted to be a musician. So there is always this like battle, inner battle between music and design. But lately, I'm kind of feeling fortunate that I have this gig because it's something that at the moment I'm a freelancer, so like I have like some flexibility to do some music as well. So yeah, it's great. And it's nice that I don't have to do, like maybe a dead end job or whatever to get by, and I can fund my music. You know, that's important to me.
Yeah, the freelance thing makes a big difference. I'm not freelance, but I work from home, so I find the time to do what I need to do. Yeah, which is awesome. So you were doing like punk stuff mostly growing up?
Yeah, I was doing like the punk rock, hardcore stuff. And then things shifted to, I think when I listened the first time to From Autumn to Ashes, that then things started to get heavier for me. So I started to listen to that. And then As I Lay Dying and Alexis on Fire, you know, all these bands. And then my band kind of shifted from like hardcore to metalcore. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a long time, maybe 10-12 years. And then that band actually evolved to progressive metal.
Yeah.
So we released a progressive metal album in 2011. And then after that, I moved out of the country. So I kind of stopped music for a little bit. I moved to Ukraine and I spent a year, almost a year there. And then I had to leave because of the Crimea War.
Oh.
Yeah. So I moved to Canada. And when I was here, like I start like live looping stuff because I had no bandmates. And that's how Northern started, because it was just like me trying to make something on my own. And like, it's like, that's why I started doing like the clean parts of my progressive metal band. I turned that into a project. And so that's how things started for me.
We were actually at the Alluvial Tesseract interval show a couple days ago. I know you were there too.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Man, I love listening to Wes play guitar, Wes Howe in Alluvial. It's like, I spoke to him afterwards and I was like, man, the way that you do like pick scrapes and pinch harmonics and like the subtlety in your playing, it's like watching like a Michelin star chef in a French restaurant like prepare like some fancy duck or something like that. Like, I really do equate it, like his ability to pull off a gnarly pinch harmonic, I just find it like so pristine. It's lovely.
I said the same thing to him.
Oh yeah?
I was like, the pinch harmonics were like squealing, like it was so cool.
But you feel it, like you feel it in your soul, like the way he does it. It's so good. But Carbomb was there, and Carbomb is from my neighborhood, is from from like Long Island, New York. Are you familiar with Carbomb at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they all have full time jobs. I think most of them are freelance. I at least know Elliot, the drummer, has like his own like multimedia installation company. So like, you know, big fancy mansions out in the Hamptons in Long Island. Mm-hmm. They want to install a movie theater in their house. Like
Right.
That's kind of what he works on. So yeah, we just talked about that a little bit, like balancing their jobs with tours. And, you know, I mean, the way that I perceived it in talking to him was they're happy with the balance. They like that they don't tour 6 months out of the year. They go home, they have families, they have friends. But it's amazing that they've gotten to a point where they could still get a tour offer. Like Meshuggah can still say, hey, do you want to come on for a month? And they can consider it. Like, you know, do I want to do it? Do I not want to do it? Like, I think that'd be a wonderful place to get to. Like, if I can still retain some security in my day to day, but still get offers to go on the road for, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks, because it wouldn't be off the table. I would try to do whatever has to be done to make it work, you know.
Yeah, when you work remote, you have some flexibility. You know, there are things. Depends on what you do, but like, what do you do for a living?
You study programming software, software engineer.
Nice. Yeah, my brother is a software engineer, and I do some, front end development and stuff like that as well. So like, this is the kind of job that you can do on the road as well. You know, like if you organized and you want to do maybe like three days a week or something, you don't actually have to take like the whole month off if you're going on tour. If you have, you know, a support system that you can, you know, work from whatever, like from the bus or from the venue or whatever. And like, you can do like 4 or 5 hours of solid work or something. Yeah, like I joined this band, Drag Me Out. It's like a metalcore band. And my plan was exactly that, you know, like to do the work as a freelancer from the road or maybe take some days off or something. But it's nice to have the flexibility. And the more I meet people from the industry and people there, you know, making it, they are like bands that we like, that we enjoy listening to, that we enjoy going to concerts. A lot of them have side gigs, you know. If not side gigs, they have like businesses, proper business going around, you know, like if they have like, you know, endorsements, like guitars, signatures, pedals.
Yeah.
They
plugins.
Plugins and music production. They do a bunch of stuff, session work, you know. So like, I think we should be more transparent about these things, you know, because it makes it more attainable for other people that are in the same situation. That most people think that they have to quit their job, that day job, to do this, you know, like if they really want to make it. And it's not necessarily true. You know, you can find a balance, you know, you can kind of tailor your life towards something that it gives you like more flexibility to do that.
Yeah, it's true that a lot of artists try to keep that kind of on the down low, you know, what they're really doing to make ends meet. But occasionally we get a glimpse, like someone will come out with like a blog post or an interview, and they'll say, yeah, we don't make very much money on the road, but you know, we're selling plugins or we're selling our pedals. And you know, that's one thing, or like teaching is another thing. I've definitely seen some transparency.
I think it's getting there. You know, like people are being a little bit more open about it, and I think it's healthy for the industry. You know, because people, you know, might be feeling like a failure because they don't, you know, they're not full time on the music.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned this on the last podcast that we did with Mike Semesky. He's a vocalist. He's doing vocals for. He did have vocals for the new Everfore Threat record that'll be out someday. And I was telling him that someone reached out to me on Instagram after I had posted some thread about, I don't even know what I wrote, but he reached out to me and said, like, hey, thanks. This really inspired me to quit my job and, you know, like focus on this full time. And I was like, I didn't say that. I didn't tell you to quit your job. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's no problem with of course, and I'm sure we can Google it right now, like legendary jazz musicians' day jobs, and pull up a full list of, you know, I think, I don't think I'm making this up. I'm pretty sure Wes Montgomery was a mailman for a period. And yeah, I mean, those stories are all over the place.
Yeah. And I think like the more, it's just like success is so different from, it can mean so many things, you know, like so many different things. And like sometimes people just feel that like being successful in music is just like living 100% of it, just playing live. And I don't think that I know a single person that lives a good life just playing shows, you know, like a lot of them are doing content, and a lot of them are doing like, you know, selling online courses and, you know, lessons, guitar lessons or whatever, you know, like in the pedals and all the deals that they get with brands and stuff. So I think people need to understand that this is, it can mean so many different things, you know. I think that like, I'm getting to a point now that like, I'm kind of happy where I am. You know, there are a lot of things that I wish I could do, but I'm kind of okay right now. And I was thinking that's fine. I think I'm lucky to have all of this, like my studio here, and then be able to make music with friends and play live every now and then. It's great.
Yeah, it's good to get to that point of zen. And like I have a friend who is in a similar boat as me, but he gets really, really down on himself.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I just want to shake him and be like, man, you have all the tools to continue to grow. You're not in a bad place. You have followers, you have talent, you have equipment. You're good right in this present moment. You're good. It's really up to you if you choose to be happy right now or not. Mm-hmm. Which is, I guess, harder for some people than others. Like, we all have very different brains. But I totally get what you're saying. And, you know, I don't have everything that I want when it comes to music. There's certainly things that I wish I had, but those are things to strive to. I hope to be playing guitar for another, I don't know, what can I squeeze out of this? 60 years?
Yeah.
You know? So there's a lot of time for me to work on and get the things that I want out of music.
Yeah. For me, when I get frustrated, I get frustrated every now and then, and I'm also open about it, you know, like I talk about it on my Instagram and stuff, because I think social media can sometimes be so plastic, you know, like so like fake of like fake happiness and fake accomplishments and stuff like that. Yeah. And so sometimes every now and then when I'm feeling really bad, I just say shit like, this is how I'm feeling, I'm gonna feel better after that. But like, this is because sometimes people are feeling the same way, you know, but if they go on social media, they just see everyone is happy, everyone is like 100% doing everything they want, living the life, you know. But mm-hmm. It's not true. Like, there's a lot of stuff happening in the background that people don't see it. And I get frustrated. I have like, the worst way for me to get frustrated is like if I look back on my career as a musician, I didn't have as much luck. you know, that band, the progressive metal band, when I was doing that in 2011, you know, if I was in Canada with the right people, I would probably be much further now in my career than in Brazil. You know, Brazil, like, I had like bandmates that were my best friends and stuff, but none of them play anymore. You know what I mean? So they were not serious about this. And I was the only one that like kept doing it like for 20 years, you know, like, so like if I look back and compare to like, I should be much further, you know, like in my career, like I get frustrated. But if I look at like how far I've come in life in general, you know, that puts me back on, okay, yeah, you did great. You're much better off than you were 10 years ago.
Yeah. I totally get that. Yeah, very similar boat. I started doing the prog rock, prog metal stuff a little over 10 years ago. And that's when my like primary band, I guess, Ever Forthright, came out with an album. And it hit at just the right time where it was a kind of a new sound. Things like YouTube weren't totally flooded yet with this kind of content. Mm-hmm. The word gent was brand new. you know, there was a time when that word didn't exist. And it was...
Someone called my band Gent back then in 2000, and I was like, what's that?
Yeah, there was a time when we didn't know what that word meant. It wasn't a word. So that album came out, and it was an instant hit. It was like an instant success. And we've done pretty much nothing to support that album or the band in about a decade. And yet we continue to have like between 2,000 and 3,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. I can't post anything of me playing or writing the guitar without at least one person commenting, is this Forever Forthright? When's new Ever Forthright? Yeah, yeah. You know? And then shortly after that Ever Forthright album, me and some friends did a project called Stimpy Lockjaw, which also kind of hit. Mm-hmm. Adam Neely spoke about it for a moment on one of his episodes at one point, and that kind of launched it. And we never toured because we weren't prepared to tour. We were just like a couple of kids writing in a basement. And, you know, so I think back on those things, and I often wonder what would have happened if I stuck with it. But at the same time, it was impossible to stick with it, you know, like, financial realities kick in. I don't think I was willing to sleep on the streets to make this work, but I think that's pretty much what it would have taken to like keep those projects floating over the past, you know, bunch of years. But like you said, you make your choices and then you find a balance and you look at where you are, and I couldn't be happier with where I ended up.
Yeah, man. And like, you know, there are things at my age now, I'm 37, that I don't want to do, you know, like I don't want to sleep on the street, like to do anything. And I think we don't need to anymore, to be honest, because you can build such a good community online that like you can reach a point to just go when people will be there. And it's going to be, you know, at least break even on a tour and be all right, you know, not like go back home with debt and anything like that. So yeah, I think there are ways to do now. That's my main goal so far. It's like to open for bands and like play nice venues, maybe tour, you know, like if my vocalist wasn't from Drag Me Out, wasn't like stuck in Ukraine at the moment, we would probably be playing some shows because we have like a nice manager that could put us on a lot of nice gigs, and we had offered like for really cool tours in Europe and stuff. And but you know, until the war is over, we can't do much. We're just writing now. Like I am actually like recording some guitars for 3 new singles, and let's see how it goes. It's gonna be more like keep the band alive as much as we can, you know, but everyone is like, yeah, stuck somewhere or whatever, and I know you can't go on tour. But like, that's my main goal with this project that I have now, the Northern. It's like I want to play live because that's my favorite thing with music, you know, it's just write music and then go and play in front of people with my friends and stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to comment on that. You often post that playing live is like the pinnacle. It's kind of the whole point.
Yeah.
And I agree because I like to improvise. Like my whole thing is I play metal, I play heavy riffs, I mix in some jazz, but I studied jazz in college and practiced it for years. So the thing that I think is unique about my sound is that you're going to see improvisation as well as going to see some metal. Mm-hmm. And there's no way I can do that just entirely on content. I mean, I could pretend, and I do sometimes, like I might roll the camera and play something and think, all right, that was good. Let's post that. But more often than not, I'm like, I could do it better. I could change it. And then at that point, it's not even really so organic and improv anymore. I'm trying to make a piece of content.
Man, that's a good point about like making content. You know, like I came up with this idea of like writing short ideas and posting them. And it was meant to be like something like for me to not worry too much about what I do and just put things out, you know, like, and even if it's simple, even if it's like, or it's complicated or whatever, you know, like, or if it, the mix is good or bad or whatever, you know, like I try to do the best I can, but like, it's so usually very short, like maybe 30 to an hour, 30 minutes to an hour for me to just sit on the guitar, do something, sit with my guitar and do something, track it, record it, mix it, master it, and like post it online, film it and then post it online. Mm-hmm. So like I came up with that idea a long time ago to try to always have something to post about. But sometimes I have to take a break, you know, because I, you know, it's content. It's not necessarily music, you know, for me, because I didn't put like as much thought on it. I don't know if we always have to do that, always like put so much thought into something. And sometimes you just can just feel it and do it. But mm-hmm. but sometimes it saturates my head, you know, like, and I have to take a break from the content side of things. And like right now I'm having a hard time to sit down and finish my next album because I just put so much things out, like over 500 sketches, and I'm kind of bored about everything I did. So I'm trying to push it like for, so I have this pressure to do something way better than what I did before. And this pressure came out of nowhere. Like, I don't know, I never had that before with this project. But now I just can't sit down and do it. You know, like, it's hard. It's just all because of the content thing going on, you know?
Wow. These are the sketches, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that idea. You often don't have to think so hard about what you're writing. And I've been listening to your music, and I've been listening to like a lot of like noise rock lately, and like Sonic Youth and things like that.
Yeah.
And because for years, I mean, I still am, a part of my brain is still obsessed with like jazz language and line theory and Holdsworth and, you mm-hmm. know, all, and these, you know, Matheny and, you know, the guys that play lots of notes essentially and lots of chords. But at the same time, I also really have started getting really into just tone and like the sound of like a Fender Mustang feeding back into an amp.
Yeah.
And then, you know, delay and reverb and every pedal imaginable is turned on. And then, anyway, I guess all I'm getting at is, you don't always have to stress what you're writing so much. And then there's this group called The Totemist. It's Rabia Massad's project. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
Their whole thing is that they write an EP in like 2 or 3 or 4 days. So that last EP, they got together and they spent 4 days writing, recording, mixing, mastering, and done. So, I think that's cool. I'm also writing some music right now that I hope to track early next year, and it's exhausting. Like the amount of times I've listened to these same 2-3 minutes on repeat and reorganized parts and wondered like, what if this one here? What if this one there? But if I was forced to come up with something just listenable in 3 days and record it, I'm pretty sure I could do it. I'd write some simple riffs. I'd write some, like, I'd probably avoid chord changes at all costs. It would just be entirely riff based, right?
Yeah.
And I would primarily focus on like the mix. Like, let's just make the combination of guitar, bass, and drum sound really good, and that's going to be the priority for this project. But
what I find really interesting about that whole thing is, and this is my experience hearing a lot of your music from its inception to its final product, there would be things about it that would be incredible that would be changed and wouldn't be as good in the final product. And obviously the other way around, where there would be things that you'd be able to polish and make better. So it would totally change how your music would feel from the way that you're used to writing things and putting things together.
Yeah. it's funny how you see like the things that change, you know, like from the demos. Like that's why it's hard to, it's kind of dangerous to share demos with friends and stuff, because sometimes people get attached to the demo and like,
yeah,
why, you know, like it sounds so good or whatever, but like, yeah, but there are a lot of problems here that you're not hearing.
Yeah. Or I show my demos to my wife to get some feedback, because often she often does have really good feedback, and she brings what I'm writing back down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, she'll be like, I have no idea how you got to this part from that other part. Like, to me, that makes no sense. And that might have been something that I was really excited about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, like maybe she's onto something though, but I'm still frustrated about it.
Yeah. 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 I do the same. Sometimes I'm writing music here and then my girlfriend's just sending me a text like, that sounds nice. I'm like, okay, cool.
No, quiet. I hate that part. God, go away. Stop listening.
That thing about like hating or liking what you do, it's so weird to me, because sometimes I would spend like 5 hours on a sketch. I almost never do that. And then I put all the effort and I do like different camera angles and I do like the really nice editing on the video and I post it and it like flops, you know? And sometimes mm-hmm. I sit down for like 20 minutes and I do something and post it online and people are like, oh my God, this is so good. I was like, yeah. Okay. You know, like, so there's no way for us to know what people are gonna think about whatever we do. Just, it's more about us doing it. Even if we don't really like it sometimes, you never know, man. It's unpredictable what people gonna, you know, like it or even love it, you know. Like, and yeah, I think like for me, the posting on Instagram stuff was also like a way, someone said that to me once, that like we should use social media as, not as like releases, you know, like when you put some music out on the social media, it's not about being like a proper release or anything. It's more like documenting your trajectory, you know. Like if I had all these almost 600 sketches sitting in my hard drive without no one seeing it, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you right now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, so I was able to reach you, you know, in a way because of those sketches that I sometimes didn't like.
Interesting. I want to learn more about, I want to hear more about these sketches, because you've written a lot of them. You've said some of them take longer than others. You don't know if it's going to be a hit or a miss, but so I struggle with content. I think, I like the idea of doing something like a sketch, because it would force me to post something that I don't have to think too hard about. That isn't really something I've ever done before. So I guess it's a little bit scary, but I do want to hear more about your relationship with doing these sketches. Like, is it exhausting? Mm. Would you recommend others do it?
Yeah. It's like the best thing that I got out of these, you know, without counting like the external factors, like, you know, meeting people and stuff, it's, I got better at writing, you know, I got better at recording. I got better at tracking with a metronome. I got better at like sound design. I got better at like, production in general, because I have, even though I have a template for everything, you know, like I sometimes have a different idea and like, and then I just like, I don't need to start from zero. I have like something that gets me 70% there, and then I just keep like polishing it afterwards. But I think the habit is really cool. You know, it's almost like a work ethic kind of thing, you know, like you sit down, you write something, you do this, you post it, and your job is done. It's like almost going to the gym. You know, yeah. Every morning you go to the gym or whatever. but my gym is coming here, like picking up my guitar and like doing something, you know. And it's funny because we, with all of that, I'm way too much in that's one problem that I struggle with. It's like I'm way too much in my head. I'm like OCD, and you know, like I want things to make sense. I want my pedal board to be sleek and like all tight, you know, like these all black pedals or whatever. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of stuff that kind of bothers me when I'm doing something, you know. So it has to be perfect for me, perfect conditions for me to. I have to remove all the frictions to do something like that. And I always tell people to do that, you know, remove frictions. Like I have a tripod here. The light is here. There's another light in the back. There's, you know, like when I need to record something, I just take my camera from there, put it there, turn myself to that side of the studio, and I hit record. You know, it's like always like, and I got good at this, you know, like, so it takes me no time to make. We could make a sketch right now, and it would take us like half an hour, and it'd be ready to post online. You know what I mean? Like, so like doing that, it's not going to make you. I don't get better at like technique or anything like that, right? But I get better at music, you know, at like making it. And whenever there are sketches that I stop because I don't want to go too long into the sketch, but I'm like, I know everything that comes after this, you know, like I know how to finish that song, you know, like, and another really cool thing that happens, which is a little bit more like in a marketing side of things, is that I can test out ideas, you know? So like I put it online. There are some ideas that went viral, and I know that this has to be on my next album because people naturally like it. And I was like, okay, there's something there that is touching people, you know? So like I do that a lot, you know? So like I have a list, I pre-selected 20 sketches, and then I selected 8. And those 8, they all have a reason to be there. I have my criteria are like people really liked it. That's a big point. Or either I love it and I just want to put that there because it's my music, whatever. So I want to do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. Or second, like I see that sketch complements the other songs around it. Or there's something different about it. There's a sound that I made that is pretty unique. And like I have to keep doing that, you know, like, and that's going to be like a ear candy for someone that's paying attention, you know? So like, maybe no one's going to notice, but if one person noticed, I'm going to be happy. But yeah, so there's a lot of stuff that comes out of this, you know, like it's a good strategy, and it's always like being seen, you know, like people are looking at what you do. And like, sometimes I don't feel like doing it, but I do it anyways, you know, so it's the gym thing, you know, like you just don't feel like going into, but you have to do it.
Very interesting. So you'll post a sketch, and it may or may not even be something that you keep or throw away, but if it gets good engagement, you can use that. You can use that information to possibly throw it onto your next album or song or something.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. I like that.
You had mentioned documenting the process. So instead of using social media as a place to release, which to me sounds like a very selfish thing, right? It's like, oh, this is all about me. Here's what I did. Mm-hmm. You're using social media as a way to document the process, which is almost now becoming this is what I'm doing for you to see. So you're, in essence, do you feel that you are making it about them?
Yeah, that's a great point, man. I learned that like on social media, people only care about themselves. So you have to connect with them somehow. So if you need to either provide entertainment, or educate someone, you know, like make someone laugh or whatever it is, you know, when you do. And I think that it is always about them, you know, but so that's why I always, as much as I can, if makes sense on the post, I ask questions to. You know, like, should I do this? Or what do you feel about this? Have you tried that? And then people are like, yeah, I'm going to, I you know, I know that pedal. I have one or whatever. And like, and then people start to talk about them. And then you start connecting with them and answering. Like, I answer every single comment on my posts. I've been doing that for 7 years and I never miss it. You know, like, unless whatever happens. But like most of the time, I would say like 99%, I'm always answering because that's the valuable part of what you post. You know, it's like you connecting with people and like asking questions and answering things, you know, like in so like it is more about social media, is always about the person that's watching it, because now it became, before it was like a place where you would share your life with your friends and like you would check on your friends' stuff. But now it became like a TV outlet or something, you know, like it's you get there mm-hmm. to see your favorite creators, you know, and that's yeah, it. Yeah. You don't necessarily see your friends anymore unless they are making content as well. So it's a bit of a weird space, but like at the same time, it's so valuable for musicians, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. Like sometimes I'll be on Instagram and I'll scroll past like a family member who's posting for the first time in 3 months. Like, I don't give a shit about this.
Where are my tasty guitar licks?
Yeah. Why are you showing me a picture of your vacation on Nantucket? I don't give a damn.
It's not why I'm here.
That's why. This actually reminds me, the concept of sketches reminds me of a book called The Artist's Way. Maybe you've heard of it.
No.
It's The Artist's Way, and it's a book that teaches. There's probably other lessons in it, but the one that tends to stick with people is the one where you journal every day, like a stream of conscious. So stream of conscious writing, like you don't think of what you want to write, you just start writing, mm-hmm. and the whole point of it is to, we were talking about friction before, but I guess this is a slightly different context. The whole point of it is to practice removing any friction from your thoughts, you know, kind of getting out onto the page. So I've done it a couple of times and it's very, very interesting to see what comes out when you almost like turn your brain off, like mm-hmm. just write a page, whatever comes to mind. And you do this for a couple of days and the stuff that comes out, you'll read and be like, am I brilliant? Like, am I? What is going on here? This is like poetry and like, I don't know. I could be the next Hemingway or something. But it's very interesting. It's an interesting exercise, and it makes
just me don't end it the way he ended it.
Yeah.
But you know, like the there is also another point about I think it was Ed Sheeran that said it at some point. That if when you start making music, or not even when you start, but you've been doing for a while, sometimes you want to try new stuff, it's going to sound like shit, you know? So there'll be a lot of shit before something good comes out, you know? So it's like almost like if you have like a tap water that is like dirty because it's been closed for too long or whatever, yeah. You need to let it open until the water is clear again. And with music, it's exactly like that. You just put as much stuff out until like things start to be clear and nice, and people are gonna, you know, like what you do, you know, like the. But the thing that like I haven't been able to do, it's something that like some people ask me to do. It's like to release all the sketches in like on Spotify or whatever. I was like, I can never do that. I'm too like perfectionist to do that, because I'm gonna see all the things that I wanted to change. It would take me forever. I can't just like upload like a minute and a half ideas to Spotify. But maybe if I wasn't so attached to that, I could have like, I don't know, 100,000, 200,000 monthly listeners, because I've been posting so much and people go there every time I do something. Oh, by the way, it's on, you know, Spotify. You know, like, so it's very hard for me. I kind of use just Instagram for that, to do my shitty stuff until something good comes out. But yeah, I could never put everything on Spotify or anything like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder how that would pan out.
Some SoundCloud rappers, they do that. Yeah. You know, they have like, even Drake, he has like what, like 100 plus songs on Spotify, you know, like, and it's, it's a lot, you know what I mean? Like it, and some SoundCloud rappers, they have like 1,000 songs, you know, like, and they are making really good money on streaming, which is insane. You know, we know that there's not a lot of money in streaming, and barely any money, to be honest. But that's one, talking about Spotify, that's my main challenge at the moment. That's my main focus. It's like, how do I get people to actually listen to my releases, not just my sketches, you know? Some of my sketches have like 340,000 plays, and I have like not a single song that is getting close to that on my release, like maybe 25 or whatever thousand, you know, like.
Yeah. Very similar boat. Yeah, I have some videos, especially since Anderson started helping me by reposting some of my stuff.
Yeah.
I have some videos that have, I mean, you know, I don't get as much as a lot of people, but like if I can get a video that gets 15,000 plays, that's a pretty good day for me.
It is pretty good.
But yeah, I don't have any songs that have 15,000 plays on Spotify. So it's interesting because that's like where I put all of my, that's like the pinnacle is record a really well produced EP or an LP, get those songs out. My last EP, I even did a music video for all 4 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And no one cares about the full length music video on YouTube, but the 30-second reels of pieces of those music videos, those have way more views by a long shot than the full 4-minute song on YouTube.
Yeah, music videos are tricky, man. Like I want to do a couple for my next album, but like I'm not expecting anything out of it. I'm doing it as like an art project, you know, like I just wanna something that will look nice, that have like a cool concept and it looks beautiful and stuff.
Right.
And because I know that I won't get anything out of it unless I chopped it in like 15 seconds or 30 seconds chunks and then promote that with like, you know, posting on TikTok and Instagram and whatever, and then do like some sponsored posts or whatever it is, you know, like that could help if I have the right, but that's the thing, man, like you have to take like the right part of the song where there is a hook. But how do you know which hook is the best hook? You know, like you have to test it out. You have to spend money, and then you don't know what you're doing, and then you spend too much money. I've been there so many times. So it's almost like I'm slowly like switching the way I see my music as like an art project and not like something that will like a business or something like. I see my presence online as a business opportunity, you know, like I sell presets, I sell merchandising, whatever, like I'm working on my online classes and stuff, because I really want to share the things that I've learned, you know, like I have this motto, which is like make more music, you know, and I want to, all the content that I'm going to do for that course and the YouTube stuff will be focused on helping people remove friction to make more music, you know, like how to just teach people to make, to get the habit to make more music, you know? And, but I don't, my music itself, I want it to be, just an art project and make it as artsy as I can and do more cinematic stuff that I do right now, you know, like even more stuff like that, because, if I try to follow what people around me are doing, I'm going to fall behind. By the time that I get there, like there'll be no one there anymore.
Well, have you seen, are you familiar with Clowncore?
Yes.
Clowncore? Those music videos? Those are pretty great. So for the, forever, my vision of me as a musician, as a guitar player is me, this white shirt, plaid, a hat, showing up to a gig and playing my guitar. I think I've probably played a handful of gigs wearing shorts, and at least I don't do that anymore. I put on some black pants. So I have 2 EPs out now under Nick Larrandy, under my name. They've come out in the past 3 years. I'm working on the third one. This one might be a full length, like 35, 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, I'm thinking, well, what else is there to do? Like, I need to make a little bit of progress. What does the next iteration of Nick, the musician, look like? And I've been really thinking about this a lot and I haven't figured it out yet, but is it a mask? I hope not. I don't want to wear a mask, but there's lots of bands now wearing masks. You got Clowncore wearing masks, you got Sleep Token, you got Ghost, you got all this stuff, but I just wouldn't feel comfortable doing it. But you know, I see, you know, you use lights, you have a certain aesthetic on stage. Like when you go on stage, I imagine it looks very different from the band that was before you or the band that's going after you. Like you have, yeah. That you have the brand is there before you even play one note. I could see that it's what's happening. Mm-hmm. That's something that I've been thinking a lot of, and I want that to translate into the album art. I want that to translate into the music video. If I do another music video for this next album, it probably won't be along the same lines as my last ones. Like it probably won't be, you know, here I am playing the guitar. Like maybe I could do something a little bit more creative to make people laugh or be like, what the hell did I just watch?
Yeah, maybe that's on the music video, you know, even though we know that like music videos are kind of dead. Yeah, we need, there's like what are you talking about? It's branding, you know, like having a brand. It's brand is about like how people see you, you know, like it's not a logo or even the aesthetics on its own. It's more like how people perceive you. And it's something that you cannot really control, but like you can be more intentional about it. You know, I'm very intentional about what I do. It's like, that's why, you know, like my pedal board is all black pedals, and I have the way I spec my custom Anderson. It's a way that I see it as like a line of guitars. You know what I mean? Even though it's not necessarily a signature or anything, but it's branded somehow, you know. So I'm working on like a baritone with them. We're gonna start working on it soon, and I'm just figuring out this is gonna sit next to the other guitars that I have, you know, from Anderson. Mm-hmm. And like so, but this is all intentional. But the way people are gonna perceive it's different, you know. Like I think that it's more about like you having like doing things with like purpose and like trying to make connections. Some people notice, some people won't notice. You know, like it's like my last EP, the artwork for each single was made out of the same shapes as the main artwork, you know, for the whole EP. And they all told the story of each word. Each single made like the title of the EP, you know, So like all these weird names that I had like off or like sale, the world or whatever. So, mm-hmm. But it was an EP about obsession, you know, like, and how you can do stupid things. So that's why it's called like Endless Sail to the Edge of the World, because there's, you know, there's no edge of the world.
I'm looking at it now just to put my eyes on it. So the, how many, what's the full album called?
Endless Sail to the Edge of the World.
Yeah, this is really cool. So you made this?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll ask you to do the album art for my next.
For sure.
For my next thing.
Talk about it.
Yeah. Cause I like all of your designs. They're really nice.
Yeah. So like the other one, I wrote for, you know, my mom when she passed away, that, Fausto, it's the name of my mom. Mm-hmm. And the thing, that was a really hard project for me because it was right after my mom passed away. So the first single came out on her birthday, like 3 months after she passed away. Mm-hmm. So like every month I was releasing a song, like until the, and then I finished the album like that. I did, it was all singles, you know, like until the last one. Oh, and every song is about like a chapter in her life and stuff, you know. And I never told this to anyone actually, but like the fruit, the papaya there on the cover is actually a picture that my girlfriend took of that in my mom's kitchen, you know.
Oh, wow.
And that was her last request, was to eat that fruit before she passed away. So it's very, very, very deep on everything in that album, you know. And I know that like not a lot of people will know about it or will think about it, but it was such a way for me to healing as a healing process, you know, because my mom was like my best supporter, you know. She was like my biggest fan, and she was always like, sometimes just like she would see a video of mine, she's like, I'm just saying that as saying hi because I know that you making music, so if you make music you're happy, so I know that you're happy and stuff like that, you know. And so it was like a really long and hard process to do the album, but it came out really sincere, you know. And it reached a lot of people, like even though like there's not a lot of plays or whatever, fuck that, but like yeah. It really reached a lot of people, and people were touched by it. And even like that's how I met Matt from Periphery, you know. He wrote me, sent me a message saying that he listened to the album, and then he was like, oh, do you want to do stuff with us and stuff, you know, for Get Good Drums. And that was really nice of him to do that, you know, like to kind of take the time to listen to everything. And then he said like, oh, your mommy would be proud and stuff like that, you know. And I was like, oh man, thanks so much. And I was like, yeah, and the whole album is like Get Good Drums, Modern Massive. But yeah, so like it's a, you know, but that's how far I can go on those concepts and stuff, you know. But I was talking to like a mentor at some point about, you know, music career and stuff. And he said like, I should do more of those videos talking about like the artwork on my music, on my EP, yeah. And everything, you know. But like, it's so hard for me to do more of those videos where I'm just talking to the camera and stuff. I feel so much more comfortable just playing, you know, playing live and stuff. But for some reason, I've been holding myself back from really doing a proper YouTube channel, you know, recording stuff. That's why when you asked me to do this, I was like, yeah, this is a chance for me to just be on camera, talk to people.
and you're done. Yeah, and you're out. Yeah, that's why I do it too. Cause it's just one, I like to talk and I like to talk to people and, you know, but this is a way for us just to do this and then we're done. Like once we hang up, yeah. You know, Omar's not done, but I guess we've been using,
that's what I'm here for, baby.
But at least we're using like autopod to kind of save us some time in cutting up the videos and stuff. But
really though, it's for you, the artists, to share your perspectives. And that's all you have to worry about, right? Like,
man, and it's such a good opportunity for me, you know, like, because of all the things that happened in my career with this project and stuff, the most important thing has been the connections that I made. You know, the people that I met, the friends that I made, and like, that's when people think about like numbers and stuff, you know, like I stopped caring so much about it like a long time ago, because you can, there's always someone with 100,000 followers more than you,
yeah.
You know, and it doesn't really mean anything, the numbers, but like the connections are so valuable, you know. I'm friends with people that like I've been a fan of, you know, for a long time, you know, and that's always like unbelievable to me, because, you know, all these people that like play super well, like Unik, you're a great guitar player.
Thank you.
And so the connection and being, you know, followed by people that are so much better than me, it's so cool. It's just making friends. It's the best, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the whole reason I got synced up with Anderson is because I started doing this podcast. Thomas Griggs, the guitar. You're familiar with Thomas.
Yeah.
I had him on. We became friends. I pretty much asked him like, hey, can you put me in touch? Cause you know, I love their instruments and,
yeah.
Just like that, you know, just making friends, making connections, like it's incredibly valuable. Like I only have on a good day a little more than 5,000 followers. But the people that follow me are, you know, Aaron Marshall, you, mm-hmm. Griggs, Wes Howe. You know, these are when they comment on my post or they reshare something that I do, you know, that's all the validation I need to know that I'm doing something right.
Yeah, man, it's cool. Like, but like, I think one of the reasons why I'm kind of postponing to finish my album is that now there's like a lot more, you know, talented people looking at me. you know, like I'm comparing myself now, but like I'm trying to get out of it and like just do it and be happy with what I do.
Yeah. Well, for the record, I like what you've always done. So
thanks, man.
Please don't feel any pressure from me to change what you're doing. I mean, if anything, you're inspiring me to write differently and think about this whole thing differently. So I'm really thankful that you found the time to come on today and talk to us. It was really cool to catch up with you, and you know, hopefully we catch each other in real life at some point.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. We'd love that.
Felipe, thanks again. We'll catch you soon. And this was probably easily one of my favorite conversations we've ever had on this thing. So
thanks, man. I had a great time too.
Right on. We'll see you around.